The one thing that I see with meditation, with a lot of people starting meditation, is they get impatient because they say, oh no, I can't stop my thoughts. Like, that's impossible. Yeah, you're right to a certain degree, but it takes a little bit of patience, like going to work out, you know, like most of the days I'm not going to feel amazing. I just show up and do it. And then one of those days, like, I'm going to feel like I'm a Zen God. like I totally tune out everything and just focus on like the blankness of what is, like the infinite slate of like your life.
Auxoro is a media platform designed to help you think better, create engaging conversations, and inspire you to live with purpose, aka do dope shit. We host podcasts like the one you're about to listen to, make videos, write articles, and share the work of interesting people. Whether we speak with doctors, designers, athletes, or music artists, we know that this conversation will leave you with a different perspective, and we hope that this conversation inspires you to live a more fulfilling life. If you'd like to keep up with all things Auxoro, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and subscribe to our twice monthly newsletter. In this action-packed email, we send you the latest Auxoro content, as well as articles, podcasts, books, shows, and other content we find exciting and useful. Go to auxoro.com or visit the link in the podcast description to join over 1,000 others who get the newsletter. Also, you can now support Auxoro on Patreon for $2, $5, or $10 per month. On Patreon, you get early access to all podcast episodes, discounts on merchandise, and one Patreon exclusive episode each month. We're an independent platform with no outside investors, and we rely on listeners like you to keep the conversation going. Go to patreon.com/Auxoro to become a patron, and thank you for the support. Today, I sit down with Kamal Zabib, a movement artist, performer, and content creator based out of Florida. In this episode, Kamal discusses some basic mobility movements that people should be doing every day, what it was like to work behind the scenes on the reality show Jersey Shore, how meditation changed his life, and more. This one got deep, and I had a blast and learned a lot in this conversation, and I have no doubt you will too. So without further ado, please enjoy this wide-ranging talk with Kamal Zabib. I'm navigating the whole TikTok world right now because it's pretty interesting to me what goes viral and what doesn't.
Yeah, dude, I know. Don't get me started.
The algorithm is different too, because on Instagram, you know how if you post something on Instagram and it doesn't do well in the first hour, it's probably not going to do well.
Yeah, totally different.
On TikTok, I've had videos blow up that I made 2 weeks ago. And that's by blow up, I mean get a few thousand views. Yeah. Most of mine get around like a few hundred to 1,000, which a lot of times is more than Instagram. I feel like TikTok's way more organic.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like the growth is just way more organic. Like you can switch it up too. I got on the app and I just started making everything, bro. I like to just cause it's mm-hmm. more practice, more content. Like the more you try, the more you fail, like the more you'll just like eventually be good at the end. And since I didn't have a following, I wasn't really like caring too much about what my content was. So I was just making stuff. And then now I'm like actually like seeing what is my niche and like how the hashtags actually help you in that sense. So maybe like mm-hmm. using For You page as a hashtag isn't actually like that great, because you're just like giving it to everybody instead of like the people who actually like need to see your content or want to see your content.
Yeah, there are a couple people I follow on TikTok that give TikTok tips. That's the thing behind their account whenever a feature comes up. Or there is this woman that made a video about hashtags and how on Instagram people search hashtags. So when you want
to be found in a hashtag that you look through and you think, okay, this is similar to my work, people are clicking on that hashtag and then you go to it like normal Instagram shit. But on TikTok, people don't search on hashtags. TikTok uses your hashtags to kind of place you in a group of similar creators. So you're, if you put on your For You page in your hashtag, or you just do hashtag viral, you're making it harder for TikTok to group you with people that are in your content. So you might actually be hurting yourself.
I know. And at the same time, though, you do want that like unlimited kind of that variety too. Because I mean, some of my content, like I would say, is only geared towards calisthenics, like fitness people, like people that do handstands. I don't know, like those kind of people. But then there's some kind of content that's just, I mean, I'm just making for fun and like it's intriguing and it's like really visually appealing. So I, that's where I'm like stuck on that sense, but it's a learning process.
I put up some stuff about podcasting, like how to do remote podcasting. And then I did one video on things that I've learned with podcasting that have also translated to dating, like speaking to women more confidently and some things that I just realized about myself. And that did really well. So then I started doing more dating tips, like how to approach talking to a stranger or something, or things that I've learned from talking to someone for 90 minutes that you can apply.
Oh, I saw that one on the gram.
Yeah, dude, it was, and it's weird because it did decently on Instagram, but then on TikTok, I guess that for whatever reason, that video just did really well. So I'm trying to experiment right now where every so often I'll take a video from TikTok and put it on Instagram and just see how it does, kind of bounces off one each other.
Same, man. So one of my videos like got a bunch of views on Instagram and like mm-hmm. not a lot of views on TikTok, because yeah. It's also me like not knowing how to create for the platform just yet, or like still experimenting with the whole idea and like knowing what actually pops and like knowing what's actually engaging and what the algorithm like puts in first, like before anything. Like it just wants mm-hmm. you to stay on the app for as long as possible. So you're going to need to first hook people and then let them want to stay till the end of the video.
Yeah.
Like however long that takes you, but that's the main idea and what you want to achieve.
So to get more into what you do, and TikTok is definitely a part of that with the ever-changing technological landscape, how would you describe to other people what you do?
First and foremost, I'm a human being that's like trying to survive and spread good vibes. But secondly, I'm an entertainer. That's like the main thing. Like I move to entertain people. Like I grab a guitar sometimes to entertain people. I picked up fire performing as well. So I spin fire poi, which is like a handle, chains, and then wicks that you light on fire and you spin them like to music. I do handstands. I was in the Florida State Circus, so that's kind of how I got into handstands. Back when I was in high school, I was into musical theater. So that's kind of how I was expressing, how was I like entertaining and making people laugh. Honestly, like that's like the one thing that I'm an entertainer. And it honestly like took me a long time to just be all right with just saying I'm an entertainer, because it's like, oh, how are you changing the world? How are you affecting other people? But it's a deeper message within just entertaining that I'm also trying to spread, which is just, I mean, look out for each other, like to have love, like in the forefront of what you're doing, so that it spreads to everything that you do, you know, and like the people around you, it helps and it affects the world, makes it a better place. That's really what I want to do.
So to catch people up on what you've been doing the past few years, and you gave me a synopsis last time we spoke about some of the projects you've been involved in, and you mentioned the Circus of Florida State. In the past 2 to 3 years, or even before that, if you feel like it would be helpful to kind of bring people up to speed now. Could you give a synopsis of where you kind of started in entertainment? I know you said you were a production assistant and then you were working in videography in Colorado, got reintroduced to yoga, everything like that. So help me catch people up to where you are now.
Yeah, this is a long story.
go for it, dude. Yeah, that's what podcasts are for.
Absolutely. So yeah, I was born in Caracas, Venezuela. I moved here when I was 8 to Weston, Florida. This is Weston, Florida. Was raised here. Started as a swimmer when I was 10 years old. Kind of got into that jock life a little bit. That's kind of how I got my athletic background. And then when I was in high school, like towards the last 2 years, I've always thought about being in the theater and, you know, entertaining, because I always like loved to make my friends laugh. Like I was pretty much the class clown like all my life. And that's what I identified with.
Yeah.
So I got into theater. I finally got the call to go to the theater, or just me like owning up and like having the courage to audition for a musical theater class. And I got a role. I was in like various roles in musicals. And then after that, I kind of just stopped doing the whole swimming thing, stopped doing the whole musical theater thing, and went to Florida State. Did not know what I was doing, was kind of lost. There's a lot of people there that it's just fraternities and, you know, things that you get lost in. Like people just want to go to college and like, hey, like, let me just pay so that I can just, I mean, like, it's not like, not like every frat is like that, but they get people. That's how they hook people in, because you go in to college not knowing what you're doing, not knowing who your friends are, not knowing who you are in general. And then like, they're like, hey, like we already have like established friends that you can have, you know? So there's a lot of things I could have gone into that, and I was trying to be, but then I just felt myself just like really disingenuous. And then there was,
I just want to say to pause real quick. I get the fraternity and brotherhood thing, because I played baseball in college the whole time I was there. So it's like you come into a school where you know nobody, and then you automatically have 30 people that you're going to be hanging out with every weekend. And so if I was just a student who wasn't a student athlete, but you know, it was just more of like the regular routine, you didn't have to go to practice, lift and stuff like that, I could definitely see myself turning towards a fraternity, which some guys did, even though they played, which I don't know how they swung the initiation, because that was rough during the practice season. But I know that some people may have different views on fraternities, but as an athlete that was close to a lot of guys in frats, I know that they got a lot of shit from the school, but they also did provide a really good time for other people, and a lot of times out of their own pocket. And I had a close bond with a lot of those guys in fraternity life. So I know there are many different sides to it. And Florida State is a whole nother level than I went to University of Richmond, which only has 4,000 or 5,000 people. I actually used to date a girl at Florida State. And so I went down and partied for a Florida State Clemson football game for a weekend. And it's like a whole nother planet. But yeah, I just wanted to get that in about the fraternity culture.
And again, like it's a case by case scenario. Like that's just what it was at Florida State at the moment. Maybe not for certain frats, maybe not for anything. It was just a reflection of what I was feeling at that time, which was an identity crisis and not knowing what I was doing. So I could have jumped in and, you know, try and like join anything that I could get to, but I really wasn't feeling that. And more so than that, like I was just like walking by a circus tent like every single day, like thinking like, what is this thing? And like finally someone in there like looked at me and was like, dude, you come here like every day just like walking by, like, and like stopped to stare, like, why don't you come and audition? And I was like, I mean, I've never done any of this stuff. Like, I don't know anything. Like, and he's like, well, you look like a strong guy. I was like going to the gym all the time, but I didn't really have any skills.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, like the next morning, I just went and signed up and I went, did the audition, passed the strength test, got a call back, and then got in a hand balancing routine. What was the other thing? Quartet Adagio, which is like
Quartet two Adagio. Guys,
yeah, it's like two guys swinging a girl, and I was the catcher. So it was like they would just swing her, and I would catch her, like pretend she's like this, and like I'm catching her like that. I know people in the podcast can't hear this, but.
No, I'm recording, so some people will be able to see it. But yeah, you basically, if you're just listening to this, I guess you could Google or YouTube Quartet Adagio Quartet too. Adagio, I'm sure there'll be videos on there. That would be the best way. But it sounds like this crazy movement that I'm sure takes an enormous amount of strength to make look easy and stability. Yeah,
at the end of it, we like jump rope. Like I was jump roping the girl. Like she was like a human jump rope. It was insane. But
that's crazy.
But all of that, like I had to just train for in practically a year. So I was like, I mean, on top of like schoolwork and stuff like that, but I finally like found, you know, something that I was like really, really passionate about. So, and it joined the two aspects of my life that I really, really enjoyed, which is like movement and, well, I was doing swimming. And then now circus, entertaining, musical theater. It was amazing.
Did you stick with that all through college, the Florida State Circus?
Yeah, so I did 3 years in the circus. And then on the last year, I dislocated my shoulder. And I had plans to go audition for circuses and like train after college. And that kind of was like a huge downer for me. I like realized that I wasn't invincible. And like, I mean, you could tell me like, of course you got injured. Like you're doing handstands on top of people doing this and that, but like, you don't really know until you go through it and realize that you're really just not invincible. So
yeah, I've had many, many moments like that in baseball. And I mean, I'm nowhere near as athletic as you to be in the circus. But in baseball, one of the worst movements you can do for your shoulder is throwing an object at high speed over the top. And so there's a lot of people that say similar things. Like, of course, you tore your rotator cuff. You throw a baseball 100 times a day or you know, of course, you fucked up your elbow. You throw a baseball and people, like, it's a dangerous movement and that's what comes with it. And your job as an athlete is to make the movement as safe and efficient as possible for you to do your job. So, and that sounds like a huge part of what you're doing. Yeah, exactly. So you finished Florida State and you hurt your shoulder.
Well, I hurt my shoulder right before my last set of shows, which was like, so it was really bad. I was really like kind of depressed for about 6 months. The recovery, and then all of that, like graduation, I didn't get to perform on my last year, the circus banquet, all of that, like wrapped into one, like bye, I didn't get to whatever. And I was a captain back then.
The circus banquet sounds lit.
Yeah, it was. Oh my god, the trampoline. That's where I picked up fire performing, actually. And like one of those circus parties, like I was like so amazed by this guy, and like he was like, hey dude, like you can have it. And I was like, wow. Like, and now I'm like performing it at festivals. Like this guy just changed my life. He doesn't even know it. I don't even know his name.
Well, shout out to the guy who introduced you to fire.
Yeah. Shout out to him.
Wherever he is.
So that was really a hard hit for me. And what I was studying at the time at Florida State, what I graduated with was a digital media marketing major. So I went off to production assist at Jersey Shore, like various different places. I also worked with ESPN while I was at Florida State because I was filming their college games, so like football, basketball, and they were pretty big. So we got to ESPN too, and sometimes to like ESPN. So that got me a little bit of work when I got back to Miami. So that's how I got the job at working for Jersey Shore, working for MTV.
I wanted to ask you, because that's a unique job to be a production assistant at Jersey Shore. And I know you have a lot of, I'm sure, behind the scenes viewpoints of reality TV, but more so than the average person. What is something that people would be surprised to learn about Jersey Shore or the way the show operates?
I don't know how you could not know this, but I mean, it's not all real. Like, it is, like, the personalities are for sure real. Like, these people are exactly how you would think they are, but the story behind it, like where they go, what they do, it's like, I mean, there's always a producer in the back of the cab or like whatever, saying like, hey,
like ask about
the girls, because now we're gonna jump to the girls probably in this edit. So
yeah,
kind of like they're talking, but they say like, hey, like this. And I also bartended for The Bachelor while I was in LA. So that was also huge. Yeah, it was hilarious because the producer would come in like, hey, Jack, how do you feel about Lauren, like, going out with your girl? Like, like kind of just starting things up, like stirring it up. And then he'll be like,
trying to start some shit.
Yeah, yeah. He'll come into like the interview room, like gas these people up and then just say, okay, go. And then just step out and like rant to the camera. It's hilarious.
So it's like the producers do all this behind the scenes kind of poking and prodding to get people into certain mind states. And then that's when they turn the camera on. So you don't get to see all the build up to that.
Exactly. And there's so much like downtime. And these like productions are like a month and a half. Like people think they're like months. People think they're I don't know, people think they're like years sometimes, but it's just like it goes so fast, like, and it's go at every single moment. Like there's a crew there 24 hours a day just waiting to see what they do. And sometimes it's entertaining and most of the time it's really not.
I don't know what they do with Jersey Shore, but I've heard that for The Bachelor, they actually restrict your access to the outside world. Like you can't talk to people, even
this guy got
family.
Kicked out. This guy got kicked,
out of Jersey Shore for reaching out to people.
Or not for Jersey Shore, for The Bachelor. For
The Bachelor.
Yeah, for, I don't know, posting something on the gram or something like that.
That would make me go even more crazy, I feel like, because you have no connection to the outside world. If you feel like you are going crazy, it's not like you can talk to your brother or your mom or something, or just see, you know, what else is going on outside of the Bachelor mansion. So all you have to go on is what producers are telling you, which probably try to make you go crazy, it sounds like, for good content. And then you just have nothing besides yourself. So if you're not mentally fit and emotionally fit going into that, then I could see that being a disaster.
Yeah,
which makes absolutely good content. Producers are good at what they do. Yeah,
it makes great content, and they get them like just nicely buzzed. Like I was a bartender, so I mean, like you could give them like an ounce per hour. So like they would come in and like at the hour to get the one. It was like only one half ounce drink that they could get, or like one shot. An hour.
And they put a limit.
And they would all take it.
They put a limit on it.
They put a huge limit. Like people don't know this. And I mean, like one of the nights, like one of them got buzzed, even though he had like an ounce and a half or something, because he just doesn't drink. And they were just like yelling at the bartenders all night, but like it was just the guy, like he's just a huge lightweight.
If I knew that I could only have an ounce and a half of liquor, I would fast the entire day beforehand. That's what he probably did. Maybe this guy did it. He's like purposely like, I'm gonna eat nothing so I get fucked up off of two shots. Because there have been times where I do a 24-hour fast every so often, and there have been times where I'll go out to break the fast. Like it'll just will line up where sometimes my friends want to go do something. So the first thing that enters my body may be like a vodka soda. And I'm like, holy shit, one drink is fucking me up right now because there's nothing else in my stomach.
Dude, it's crazy. It'd be like that though.
So how did you get from what you're doing as a production assistant and back towards the movement and entertainment? Because you were around entertainment. Obviously, you're attracted to entertainment, regardless if you're doing the movement stuff or not. But what brought you back to combining both of those?
So, like I said, it was really bad when I got injured. I really got like self-sabotaged myself and told me I couldn't do anything like after that I couldn't recover from an injury. Like that was just my mindset. I don't know why I was thinking that. But
what was the shoulder injury again?
I dislocated my shoulder, but it was like a bad dislocation because I had it dislocated for like 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't know, it was the first time it had ever happened. So like all my ligaments were like really, really stretched out. So that's why it took a little bit longer for the recovery. But at the same time, like, I mean, I was still doing handstands like 6 months later. I just wasn't doing it like too much. Like I kind of had given that up a little bit. So I did the whole production assisting thing. And then I traveled a lot too. I drove from Miami to Alaska and back.
Jesus Christ.
With two of my best friends, just camped out everywhere for 35 days. Went to like all national parks. It was amazing. It was, if anybody could do this, like I highly recommend it. Because you need to do it with like people that you love though. But
yeah, you're in close quarters.
It's like, it changed the whole aspect of my life, like the whole scheme of the world.
Is there any experience on that trip that sticks out in particular? And anything, like if you were to tell your grandkids about that drive from Miami to Alaska, what story would you tell them if you had to choose one?
It's crazy because it's one of those stories that you're like, it's one of those, like, what are they called when they're just like myths, legends or whatever? It like we
like a hallucination or something?
Not even, like it's a whatever tale.
Oh, like I know, like a big, like Bigfoot or something. Or
yeah, exactly. Like that, yeah. Big fish tail, like one of those. Yeah. So me and my friends, we had finally gotten to Alaska. Like it was crazy, like driving the Canadian Alaskan highway. We were at Fairbanks. Then we made it to Denali. That was like the one place we wanted to see. Denali's like the second peak, the second highest peak in North America, or the first. I think it's the first.
It used to be Mount McKinley, right? Now they call it Denali. Okay.
So yeah, it's the big one in tribal language. So we had made it there and we were like really stoked. We got all our stuff, like went to go camp. Like our big thing was to camp in Denali. So we went to this like salmon river. It wasn't a great idea because there were salmon like still there. And I mean, we had seen bear like couple
miles down. Salmon, there are bears.
Yeah, exactly. So, but they were always there. Mm-hmm. We just needed to find a spot that was kind of clear from the river. Yeah. So we set up all of our stuff and we were like a little bit worried about the bears, but we just like, we were having such a good time, like just looking out, like the sunset. I don't know if you've ever seen a sunset on like really, really high in the world. Like,
yeah, like I was in Alaska a few years ago, actually, with my family. So we did catch a lot of good sunsets.
They're like 4 hours. They're like 4 hour sunsets with like beautiful, like vivid colors. It's insane.
Yeah, the sun, depending on how high you are, latitude, then what time of year. We were there in August. So
that's exactly when I was there. Yeah.
The sun wasn't down for that long. So it'd take a while to go down and then it would stay down for a few hours and then it'd come back up. So a lot of times you'd be going to sleep. For people who haven't been to Alaska with,
like,
you know, it's one. Like, it feels like it's daytime. Yeah. Like you need the blackout curtains or the sleeping mask.
Yeah. So the sunset would start at like 8 and then end at like 12 a.m.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. It's So we had gotten there, we had all our stuff set up, and then we walked 2 miles to get to that campsite. So we kind of just like, I don't know, we're playing, got distracted and like didn't see that there was like a storm coming. And there was I'm telling you, this storm was so huge. And we had like electronics, we had a drone with us. Like we had cameras, laptops. I don't know why we brought all of that to the campsite, but we did. And we were just like, what are we going to do? Like we set up all our stuff. Like we can't go back. Mm-hmm. And this tent wasn't even that great. So it was like just blowing it. Like the wind was just catching it and it was just flattening it out. So there was like no way we could escape. And we literally just like looked up and like all of us prayed. And this storm just went like, just circled around us. It was like the most insanely miraculous thing I had ever seen. I don't know how it happened. And
it was raining and stuff all around you except where you were.
It was raining. It was, the wind was blowing. Like we had no chance. We like tried to get in the tent and it was just like coming down. Like this tent had no chance. Like, I don't know what we were thinking. We weren't ready. But we just like looked up and there's so many stories from that trip too. There was a night that we were camped out in Yellowstone and we heard like something, and then like there was a giant hole in our tent like the next morning. And
something and, like, tried to get in.
Yeah, something tried to get in. So yeah. And it was, but it's one, I don't know. I really love those moments, man.
I definitely need to do a trip like that. And I always say someday, but I'm just going to say I will do it because someday is just never. So I will do a trip like that.
Exactly.
So after that trip, where were you at? Because you still had your shoulder injury, and this is before you got back into movement stuff, right?
Yeah. So I traveled there and then I started working at the Jersey Shore, and then I got out of the Jersey Shore and started working so I got a job at a cruise ship working as a video technician for 6 months. So I was on the Carnival, what was it?
Carnival cruise? That sounds right.
Yeah. Carnival Sunshine. That's what Carnival it was. Sunshine, yeah. Yeah. So it was nice. Like it really gave me a chance to like, I don't know if anybody's like been to Wanadu City or anybody knows about Wanadu City, but it's like,
I don't know about it.
It's kind of like a theme park for kids where they just like do different jobs in society, but like as kids. So they could bake, they could be models, they could like have an airplane simulator. And it was like, it was kind of like that, but just in a cruise ship. Like that's the way I was treating it, because I liked my job, but at the same time, I knew that it wasn't what I wanted to do.
So you were like test driving it as a job.
I was. I was like just looking at like even the navigators, like they're all Italian. I was like, what do they do? Like, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do it. And I was just always gravitating towards the people on stage, like the musicians, the performers, the people hosting, like all of those people I was really friends with and like connected with, and would always just like any time I had spare time, like I would just spend it with them, like either going up to jam on a song, because I also play the guitar.
So you were like surrounded by entertainment, by people that were doing what you wanted to eventually do.
Exactly. But I was in the tech aspect of it. So everybody knew also, like they would look at me and be like, you aren't in the right department.
Yeah. Like they would know what you could sense that about people too. Sometimes I meet someone, and especially in the creative space, because you have, for example, for one podcast, especially with the bigger podcast, you have a producer, you have maybe two or three audio engineers there, you have someone controlling a second camera, you have someone that's just kind of like running the whole show. And so you meet a lot of people and you can tell sometimes that those people are good at their jobs, but they want to be doing something different. Or they maybe want to be the podcaster or performer or music artist. They don't just want to be in that world. They want to create in that world. And I listen to a lot of stand-up comedians on podcasts, and a lot of them say that they started as the door guys at their favorite comedy club because they just wanted to be around these powerhouse comics. And then as a result of getting that job, they were around comedy, which is what they wanted. And then after that, you got to have the balls to get up on stage for open mic. So I think everyone goes through that stage where they're in the world and they see the world that they want to be a part of, but they're not yet creating in it yet. And they feel the need to start to do something, to start to be more proactive.
Yeah. And it starts to like really, I don't know, like I'm a very intuitive person. So like that for me is like very daunting mm-hmm. when I'm not living my truth, honestly. Mm-hmm. So I got back from the cruise ship, did some traveling in Asia, went to Thailand, Laos, and Vietnam for 2 months.
Is that the Golden Triangle, they call it, or something like that? I know there's a lot of heroin over there from movies.
I have no idea. I didn't know heroin, but it was
a life-changing trip. Choice.
Yeah, it was life-changing, really yeah. cheap, really affordable, and like such amazing people, such good food. Mm-hmm. Came back and just got it. Like I was still like thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do, so I'm just going to get a job like doing some other kind of video somewhere else that I love to go to, like that mm-hmm. I would love to be at, like a place I would love to be at, but like still do video work for money. Mm-hmm. So I went to Colorado, lived in Avon for 6 months, kind of was a ski bum for like 2 months in spring. Nice. Or not a ski bum, a snowboard bum, but love that. Love the hiking trails. Like I just love the nature, but I was still like trying to find myself a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was working for Vail Resorts. So I was working in like studio cameras and editing a little bit. And still there, I was seeing like that I was in the right area, but like in the wrong department. Like I would look at yeah. the host and be like, I can definitely do that. And I love doing that.
Yeah.
But in the whole, like in, while that whole thing was happening, I joined a gym that had yoga, and I stepped into that class, and one of the greatest yoga teachers that I mean, like it was my first real like connection with a yoga teacher. She inspired me to get back into movement. So and also even more so than that, like was meditation, which also changed my life.
Were you still in the mindset of that your shoulder was never going to heal fully when you started yoga? Like you didn't think it was going to be better again? Or was it
no,
a little bit better?
That's when I wasn't even trying to be an entertainer at that point. So I was just like trying to, you know, do yoga, like focus more on my flexibility and stuff, and like still doing handstands because I know how to do them, but like not really focusing on getting better at them. So when I moved there, at first I really was just like focused on my health, and that kind of just like kickstarted like the hand balancing journey again. Like I was like working on my presses, I was working on like different moves, and really getting into calisthenics, just like looking up different workout routines online in YouTube. Actually, Gabo Satorno was like one of the first people I looked up. These are his pants.
What's his name? I'll put a link to it in the podcast.
Yeah, Gabo Satorno.
Gabo Satorno. Okay.
Yeah, he actually runs a whole academy online for hand balancing and yoga.
Dope.
So yeah, that kind of started that journey. And then I was really getting into like more like, hey, like I really just want to be an entertainer. Like I want to give this whole like circus thing another try. So mm-hmm. I moved to LA thinking, you know, like, now I'm in this space and like with all these creators and amazingness. But I really kind of just did it because people say to do that. It's like
the land of opportunity. If you want to make something of yourself as an entertainer, LA is a spot where a lot of people tend to go.
Yeah.
And it's like known as that spot.
And it is a great spot to collaborate with people, but you also you got to know first what you want, what you really, really want. And mm-hmm. I really thought I did, but I wasn't absolutely clear. I knew I wanted to be an entertainer. So I moved out there and I knew it had something to do with circus and I knew it had something to do with movement and creating content. But I was so insecure, man, about all of these things. And then on top of that, like dealing with like the whole, rent is really high and prices are really high and mm-hmm. and just trying to survive out there and like make a living. You know, I was a bartender. I did do a lot of training over there. I did perform in some clubs as a fire performer, a performer in general. But I wasn't enjoying it because I wasn't doing it for... I was doing it to survive. I wasn't doing it for me anymore.
You came from LA back to Florida?
Yeah, back to Florida. I'm living at my mom's right now, honestly.
Dude, I lived with my parents for 2 years after school and that allowed me to save up some money and eventually move out. And so I think living with your parents is very underrated and it's something that like if I were to give advice to people, I would say, this is very general, but if you can get a job where your parents live and they're willing to have you in the house for little to no rent, then do that for a year or two, save up money and then go to another spot. Because I think it's better to have that flexibility than to maybe take a job that pays you more in a place where that rent is just going to eat away at you. So I think living with your parents is an underrated move after school.
You kind of just have to like weigh your options. Like, what are you going to get? You're not going to have the privacy. I mean, everybody has different circumstances. Like everybody has a different relationship with their parents, with their loved ones. You know, it's not up to me to say like, oh, you should do it or you shouldn't. And it's a culture thing. It's also, but if you're doing it on the basis of like, hey, like, what are people going to think of me? Like, then maybe that's like not the best option to weigh, you know, like really giving a lot of value to what other people think of you is not the best option mm-hmm. ever.
Yeah.
Because you're going to not be genuine to yourself. You're not going to attract the things that you want into your life and you're not going to be aligned with those things.
Yeah. And you can't control what other people think of you. So there's no sense in worrying about it.
There's 7 billion people in the world. Like not all of them are going to like you. Most of them aren't. And that's totally fine.
So what's your day-to-day like right now in terms of training and working and making content, things like that?
So I usually wake up like 7:30-ish, wake up, meditate, do a little bit of stretching, take out the dogs, come back.
You don't have to go like exactly if you don't want to like half hour half hour. You can just say like in the morning I do this and then like training and working and making content. Cause I know those are three things of, you know, that comprise a lot of what you do.
Yeah. So every single day I work out, I make at least 3 to 4, maybe 5 to 7 pieces of content. And I said workout content. And then that's pretty much it right now. I mean, I'm working, like I'm just training, putting most of my hours into my training and making content. Cause that's the two things I can do right now. until restaurants open back up.
Would you describe yourself right now as a movement artist and an entertainer? Because you said you're an entertainer. Is that, if you were to like give yourself a job title on LinkedIn, what would it say right now for looking
entertainer.
For entertainer?
Yeah.
What are some of the movements that you're training the most right now when you go into the gym?
So I'm training my compression strength for when I get back to aerial training and gymnastics. Mm-hmm. So that I can do a lot of the moves a lot easier and use up less strength and use a lot more technique to get me to mm-hmm. Basically make all of these moves easier. There's that. There's a one arm handstand that I've wanted for the longest time. Like ever since I started doing a handstand, I was like, how long is it going to take me to do a one arm?
Yeah.
And that's what everybody says, but it's just, it's so different for everybody. So just enjoy the journey.
What's the best way for people that are interested in learning how to do a handstand? Because I see, you know, we were talking about TikTok before. There's so many people on TikTok that are doing handstands and putting out tutorials. And you would know better than anyone, if you're starting to get into handstands, or maybe you've never done one before, what does that process look like? Like, are you able to explain it over audio? Is there a way you could help people
absolutely.
Out there trying to do a handstand?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I would say first, it's all about self-awareness. So like start knowing your starting point. Like, can you do a lot of push-ups? Do you have strong triceps? Like, have you been weight training? Like, do you have a lot of flexibility? So based on all of these things, you can say, okay, I'm going to start with a push-up, or I'm going to start with some arm balances that I can do. And always like a great starting point for any of these movements in general, like any of these hand balancing, is yoga, because you use a lot of that stability and strength and core strength to stabilize yourself while you're inverted. And there's also just inversions in yoga. So I would go through, okay, push up, you have a down dog, and then now let's start with some arm balances. So you go to crow or a frog stand. And then after a frog stand, you would say, okay, now I can do those two, like pretty solid.
What does a frog stand look like?
So a frog stand is like, it's kind of like a crow, mm-hmm. but it's like, this is a crow.
Yeah.
And a frog stand is just like, instead of your knee being like by your elbow, it's on mm-hmm. the outside. So it's just balanced. And this
gotcha.
Is a crow.
And for people listening to this, there'll be a version on YouTube where you can see Kamal demonstrating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then once you're graduated up to that, then you could go into a headstand,
mm-hmm.
which you kind of just like make a pyramid right by your face, interlock your hands, and then put that cradle that you just made on the back of your head.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, so he's cradling and then doing, what is that called?
That's called a headstand.
That's called the headstand, okay.
And then there's a forearm stand. All of these, like, by the way, like when you first start practicing them, just do it against the wall. Like it's mm-hmm. going to make it a lot easier. You're going to focus on just the strength that it takes and the balance and the muscle memory, so that once you can graduate to the different moves, you're not working. It doesn't take as much time for you to get back up. So you can just keep on practicing that same move for like 5 minutes instead of 1 second. And then you're like, oh no, I don't want to get up there. So mm-hmm. you stop doing it. So after the headstand, you do a forearm stand.
And then, okay. So now he's on his forearms.
And then you graduate to a handstand.
To the handstand. So that's the progression.
That's
and you said start against the wall, so you can kind of feel it out with a barrier.
So, yeah. To recap, the progression would be push up, crow, and frog stand. Then headstand against the wall. Then off the wall. then forearm stand against the wall and off the wall, then it would be handstand against the wall and then off the wall.
Yeah, there's a handstand is something that is cool to just be able to do in front of other people.
Like, it's a cool party trick.
Yeah, like whenever I see someone do it at a party, even back in school, like if someone could just break out some crazy move or like a dance move, like, or do a handstand or something, yeah, I'm just like, holy fuck, like it immediately gets people's attention and you don't need that much space to do it.
You don't. You just need your own body too. That's also like a huge advantage in this time, in this quarantine, honestly, that I already have this body awareness, like the self-awareness that I can work out with just my body. I can do all of these things. I know how the mechanics of it, because when you're learning calisthenics and yoga and everything like this, you're really just learning how to utilize your body to become stronger. Like, you don't need weights, you don't need anything. And then all of this strength could actually be put to skills that you have, you know?
Yeah, that's something I wanted to get into. So for the average person like myself, who is not advanced in movement art or circus art, and maybe doesn't have access to a huge amount of weights because they're in quarantine, maybe they have a pull-up bar or a few resistance bands, a couple dumbbells, what are some underrated strength exercises that person can do in quarantine with limited equipment that can maximize efficiency? So maybe like some non-complicated exercise that the average person can do that will have a high return on strength.
There's a lot, because there's different strength, but I mean, a lot of the full body workouts, like you can do, like you can do a deadlift with one, like, let's say you don't have weights. So, a deadlift is no longer challenging, but now you can do it with one leg and you could grab like anything, like grab a book, like grab anything heavy with the other leg. And you're literally, it's going to burn. Like, you're going to,
it's very efficient. So single
leg
deadlift. I've even seen people, I just see the backpacks on your door. A lot of people will fill up backpacks with books or, you know, whatever they have in their apartment and just use that as a weight, which you can do to fill up your backpack.
Yeah. And well, if you don't, like you said, if you do have equipment or if you just have like some bands or a pull-up bar. So if you don't have equipment, just a push-up is great. There's also just retracting and protracting your scapula so that you can, so if you're not like really great at a push-up, you could just do that for an extended period of time. So like 30 minutes in a set, like in a circuit, so that you gain that strength to be able to do a push-up at the end. So like there's always like so many different progressions to everything. If you're really, really struggling on one thing, then that means that you're not doing the right progression in the exercise. And if an instructor can't instruct you to do your certain progression, you should probably get another instructor.
So yeah, I guess that would be a good way to approach it. So to complete the circuit, because we have single leg deadlifts, push-ups, and scap push-ups, what are a couple other exercises that people can add in to complete the full body circuit? As an example,
there's so many band exercises that you can do. There's just pulling them aside like this. This is really good for your back shoulder.
Yeah.
And then there's this one. There's one that you can always tie it up to a door or something like that. Mm-hmm. There's this one.
And again, there's going to be a version on YouTube where you can see Kamal demonstrating all of these. So if you're just listening to this, though, I'll put the YouTube link in the podcast description.
There's these. Let's see. The ab workouts are really amazing. Like when you're doing
when you're doing not just crunches.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're only doing crunches, you only work a, like really your mid,
the top,
abdominal.
The top.
Yeah, the top and like the mid, really.
Yeah.
And if you work both sides, so you do V ups. And if you can't do this, just go like this. So
you keep your hands down. Your legs,
yeah. Keep your hands down. And if you can't do that, then just stay like this.
You can just hold it there. Yeah.
Exactly. Hold it. And this is really good for your handstand. If you're working on your handstand, the way that you work a handstand without like being inverted, or even just like the core stability it gets to be inverted,
mm-hmm.
is you lay back, you lay flat on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you put your, you make sure that your lower back is touching the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Extend your feet and extend your arms and just flex there. Just hold it there for like a minute. Yeah.
That so you try, be, you try not to arch your back up. You try to make, keep exactly. your lower back in and contact with the ground.
Yeah. That'll get your, like the muscle memory it takes for your core to, mm-hmm. to not flop basically. While you're inverted.
So I'll ask you a similar question for mobility. So for the average person who is maybe sitting around for 17 hours a day at their desk, they have a normal 9-to-5 job. They're working out maybe 3 to 4 times a week with resistance or weights. What are you think 3 to 4 underrated mobility exercises, and you can present it in a circuit again too. You don't, it doesn't have to be just one part of the body, that would be helpful for someone who is sedentary for a large portion of the day.
So definitely if you're a sedentary for most of the day, I would, and if you're sitting in a chair 9-to-5 or anything like that, that's really going to hurt your posture. Mm-hmm. So you want this, you don't want that. So you want to open mm-hmm. up your shoulders back.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is interlock your fingers.
The back of your, so
I'm doing it
interlock
now too.
Your fingers. Yeah. And the back, and then just bring that down and do a forward fold from there. That's like one of the most underrated and like the best thing for your posture.
Yeah.
So this exercise,
and if you can't do that, you can also just grab a rope or even just a band. If you can't reach mm-hmm. and do the same thing.
Yeah. I guess you could use a towel too. Sometimes I'll use a towel to like, to do that exercise where you interlock your fingers.
That too. Yeah.
Sometimes I'll use a towel to connect it and like pull up to connect. If you can't nice. Reach, use a band or a towel.
Nice. And for your hamstrings, I would say downward dog for like the average mm-hmm. person would be incredible. And if you want a challenge while you're in downward dog, you can always grab the opposite hand to the opposite mm-hmm. foot, or the mm-hmm. hand to the opposite foot, and then just add an extra stretch right there.
And hold it there.
And hold it there.
And you learned that from yoga, right? Because downward dog is
learned
from yoga.
Learned that from yoga. Yeah. What I also learned from yoga is pigeon pose, which a lot of people, you said, like they don't really take care of like opening up their hips. So
yeah.
Pigeon pose really does that well. If you're listening to this, pigeon pose. Just Google pigeon pose.
yeah. This is something that I actually do every morning, a pigeon pose for a minute each side. If I go a few days without doing it, I can really feel it in my hips. Like how I'm someone that definitely is, that tends more to be tighter. So for me, if I don't keep a baseline stretch of 4 to 5 times a week, then I definitely feel myself tightening up. Like I can feel it the next time I do it. I'm like, wow, my hip feels tight. That's a good one.
There's that one, and then there's just basically it's stretching your middle split, but instead mm-hmm. of that, you just cut it. So you bend at the knee
mm-hmm.
and then just spread the knee out.
And your toes pointed outward.
And then toes pointed outward, yeah.
You really kind of just rock back and forth.
Like from here, mm-hmm. you can go down to here.
Gotcha.
That's really what you want. What else? What else can we do? I'd say for stretching, so like a very sedentary person. We talked about chest openers.
It could be like your average person too. It doesn't have to be like super sedentary. So just anything you think would be helpful to the average person.
I mean, forward folds, like I think are one of the most underrated like stretches you could possibly do, especially mm-hmm. because people just do it wrong. I mean, it's not.
What do they do wrong about it?
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you right now. So there's a lot of technique that it just has to do with breathing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really have to do with any of what your body is actually doing. So you take a breath and then you exhale down. You bring your chest up. You don't want to arch your back while you're doing it. You don't want to mm-hmm. like hunch your back while you're going yeah. down. So you really want to bring that chest. If this is like the most I could do today, then I'm just going to go here and then bring my neck down.
So you want to maintain good posture while you do it. You don't want your
exactly.
back to curl up.
Exactly. Okay. So you want to keep that chest open, bring it down. And then when I can't bring it down anymore, that's when I bring my neck down. And you should feel it all the way down to the back of your, mm-hmm. to your lower back. So that's how you know you're stretching right. Especially yeah. don't stretch for less than 7 seconds. It really just does not do a lot for the body, especially because your body is sending pain signals to your muscles mm-hmm. at first like 7 to 8 seconds or 7 to 10 seconds. I'm not really sure what this is. So you don't really get that relaxed feeling. You know, that's why people say stretching hurts so much, because they're not, I mean, yeah, it does hurt. Don't get me wrong, but it's also relaxing at the end. If you relax into the stretch.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that yoga teaches you. And I haven't been in a consistent yoga routine for a while, but one of the things I always enjoyed about it, especially hot yoga, is that you just breathe into the stretch. Or if you feel uncomfortable, don't try to ignore it. Just acknowledge the discomfort and kind of breathe into it and use it. Like use your breath to go further.
Teaches you about life.
Yeah, exactly. So
breathe into life.
So speaking of breathing, how did you get into meditation? Because that's something that I also do.
Yoga, honestly. That's honestly why it's one of the first tools, like one of the first things I tell people to do. Like if you haven't moved, or if you don't move, or if you're sedentary, if you're just getting into movement, like just step into a yoga class, see how you do, like follow the progressions, don't go too fast. And also meditation, like what we were talking about.
Do you have a separate meditation practice from yoga, or do you use yoga as your meditation?
I kind of start off, so I do my own yoga practice now, mm-hmm. nowadays, but I kind of just start moving, just start getting into my body, and then I'll sit down. And once I'm ready, I'll say, okay, 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, maybe however I'm feeling that day. But I'll just make sure that I'll first start focusing on my breath and starting to, you know, fight with my primal brain, just kind of like all these thoughts coming into my head and me not being able to silence them out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as you start being patient with yourself. You're not gonna. The one thing that I see with meditation, with a lot of people starting meditation, is they get impatient because they say, "Oh no, I can't stop my thoughts. Like that's impossible." Yeah, you're right to a certain degree, but it takes a little bit of patience. Like going to work out, you know, like most of the days I'm not gonna feel amazing. I just show up and do it, and then. Mm-hmm. One of those days, like I'm going to feel like I'm a Zen God. Like I totally tune out everything and just focus on like the blankness of what is, like the infinite slate of like your life.
Yeah. I use this app called Waking Up that's by Sam Harris. And that lets you do 10 or 20 minute meditations every morning. And I usually do a 20 minute meditation in the morning. And then sometimes I'll do a 10 minute one at night or later in the day. And like what you were saying, there are days where I feel like for 20 straight minutes, I was not focusing at all. I was thinking about all the bullshit I had to do that day. Maybe I'll go in and out of paying attention to a few breaths here and there. But for the majority of it, it was, you know, I wouldn't describe it as this moment of Zen, or like, I don't want people to think that meditation is some magic bullet where like, if you don't feel, you know, connected to the spirituality of everything around you, that you're doing it wrong. There are definitely times where you break through that lens and you feel super mindful and present, and that's what makes it all worth it. But just sitting down for 5 minutes a day, which is what I started with. I started with a timer, not the meditation app, where I would just put 5 minutes on the clock, sit there. My mind would race, almost gave up after 2 weeks. But then after a month, started to notice a difference where I felt myself becoming less reactive and I was actually pausing more than I used to. If someone would insult me or if, you know, I felt myself getting angry, I would notice the bodily sensations of that person just called me an asshole, or I'm really angry right now, or I'm feeling sad, or I'm feeling happy. Like I wouldn't just react to my emotions. And so after a month, I definitely think that you should stick with it for at least a month, 5 days a week, every day if you can, before you judge it. Because I wanted to give up after 2 weeks. It's been almost 2 years, and it's been probably the most life-changing habit that I've adopted, up there with, you know, working out and eating well. Like I would put meditation in there for your just overall mental health and spiritual and physical health. It kind of leaks over into everything.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been one of the most life changing habits as well for me. It just trickles down.
Do you use an app or use a timer? What does your practice look like?
So I would use like YouTube guided meditations. Then I just started using the sounds, and then I just cut out the sounds in general. But first of all, like before that, I just was doing Shavasana. So like at the end of a yoga practice, you get down, like you lay on your back and you do a 10 minute meditation. So that's kind of how I started doing it. You know, it's at first you have like these, oh my God, everybody's looking.
Like, Shavasana is the dead body pose, right? Like you're supposed to just relax every muscle in your body. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the heart, some yoga teachers have told me that that's the hardest thing to do, is actually relax every muscle in your body. That it takes, you know, years and years and years of practice to actually do a true Shavasana.
Yeah, because I mean, we hold so much tension, like especially that also teaches you a lot of self-awareness, like meditation, I feel tension in my jaw that I haven't felt before, you know. Mm-hmm. And what you were saying, I really wanted to touch on that you have this pause, like before I get insulted and I have this pause now to either react or to think about what I'm acting. So like to think with intention or to react to what my primal reaction is. So my primal reaction is, hey, like I just want to get back at you and like insult you back. But me like thinking for a second, like, is that really going to actually help me? Then I just have a different reaction, which trickles down to everything in your life, trickles down to like all of these interactions that you have. So people will just see you as a nicer person, and you'll be a nicer person, and it'll feel better.
Are there any cues that helped you in particular when you're meditating? I know you mentioned you focus on your breath. Is there anything that you tell yourself specifically? Like for example, with my breath, if I'm trying to come back to it, sometimes I'll focus on a specific area of my body where I feel it, like maybe my upper chest or my belly. Sometimes I'll focus on my nostrils where like I want to feel that first.
That's mine.
That first like wisp of air, and then like all the way to the last out. There also, Sam Harris has some cues in the app where if you do a meditation with your eyes closed, because he leads it with eyes closed and open, often both in the same session, to stare into the darkness behind your eyes like you would if your eyes were open. So like just because your eyes are closed doesn't mean you can't look into your eyes like a sunset. Like you still see shapes and colors and shadows. Like look into your eyes like you would look out onto the horizons. So a lot of times that helps me. And then the last one I would say,
well, that I'm gonna write that down.
yeah. So there's, I focus on the breath. I focus on staring into the darkness behind my eyes. And then I also focus on something recently that he brought up in the app is breathing in the world towards you. Like when you breathe in, like imagine you're in a car where like when you're in a car, you can see the world coming towards you. Like when you're going forward, you could see yourself going forward, or you can see the world kind of being pulled towards you. So when you breathe in, imagine the world's being pulled towards you. If you're staring at a wall while you're doing it, or, you know, whatever you're looking at, imagine like the world's coming in slightly towards you. And then when you breathe out, like imagine it's you're pushing yourself out into the world, like the world's going away from you a little bit. And when I really get into the zone, I can almost feel the room. It's like breathing with me a little bit, like it's coming towards me a little bit. And then the room like goes away from me a little bit. That's, and it doesn't always feel like that, but on days where I'm really feeling it, it's a helpful cue because it kind of gets you out of your own thoughts.
Yeah. That's the connection that you're feeling right there, man. But whatever it is that helps you visualize and be in this moment and not think about what you're going to be doing or what has happened or any kind of emotions that you might be holding on to, like that is the thing that you need to focus on. I focus on my nostrils like you do. That's what I start off with. Sometimes I'll even start counting 1, 2, 3, 4 for the inhale, and then 1, 2, 3, 4 for the exhale, just to like have an even breath so that it's rhythmic. And that really, really gets my body in tune to be relaxed and just kind of let go of things for a certain moment. And I would honestly say it's like going to work out for your brain. Like think about it like that. Mm-hmm. 'Cause if you think about it as like just meditation, then it's not, I don't know how people like think about it, like this connotation of like it all being hippy dippy and not actually reliable and successful. Like it is. Like
I think
Kobe Bryant, all of these people, amazing musicians, amazing human beings do it.
Yeah. I think right now meditation has a stigma of people know it's good for you, and it's becoming popular as an industry where there are a lot of apps and people creating content about it. And there's a lot of opportunity to make money off of it, which I think also brings with it some negativity because not everyone is the best teacher and is actually teaching.
And what it stands for. Absolutely. Amen.
Yeah. And I think, at least for me, that what I hope people take away from this is that even as someone who's meditated for 2 years and there are people that are so much more experienced than me and that actually teach the meditation practice and have been doing it for decades, I can speak for myself as someone who's been doing it for 2 years. I definitely have days where I feel super frustrated and I feel like I'm not focused at all and I'm not in control of my thoughts. And you get better as you go along. But if you feel that at the beginning, which you will, don't stop. Just sitting down and doing the time at first will help you get to those moments where you feel a clarity. And the goal isn't to become a better meditator, because it doesn't mean anything if you're not carrying it over into the rest of your life. It's to just live better and be kinder to people and be less reactive. So even if you have a session where you think, oh, like, you know, I sat down for 5 minutes, my thoughts were racing, you know, I didn't focus on my breath one time, you're still getting to a point where you're helping the carryover and the transition into your life where you're at least trying to become more mindful. So just doing the work at first is enough. Don't feel like you have to be in the super zen zone.
Absolutely. I also compare it to just, I mean, when I first get into the gym, like I'm doing 10 pounds, you know, like I'm not going 35 pounds, like all the way. Like I don't just get there. Like it's the same thing with meditating. Like I'm not just going to like tune everything out when I haven't been tuning anything out, like for my entire life. Like I need to first sit down, be patient with myself and show up. Like it's like you said, it's half, I guess I not even half, like more than half, 80% of the battle is just showing up. Like you set a time to do this, do it. That's it. No excuses. Yeah. Everything is showing up.
So would it be fair to say, based on what you do and how you spend your time, that you find movement and the art of movement more beautiful than the average person? Like there's something to you about it that, because you feel not only driven to be around it, but you actually want to use it to entertain other people. Is that fair to say that you find it more beautiful than the average? Is there something you could say that would articulate to listeners what it is that you find more beautiful about movement and the connection to the body?
Movement is medicine. I mean, it's like, if you feel anxiety, move. If you are like, it could be in like a theoretical sense that you take this, or like a literal sense, like actually move. Like I'm feeling anxious about the content I'm making, create more. Like it's not just movement in general, but just do more. And then actually getting back to movement, I think movement is medicine, but it's also just a way to get to know this vehicle better. Like this is the only body that we get. So, I mean, if you're not building the best vehicle to run your life, to put you into the places that you want to get to, then it's not going to run for you. It's not, you're not going to be in control of it. Your primal instincts, your cravings for food, your cravings for other things are going to run your life. It's not your self-awareness, not your discipline, not your body that's going to run it. So take care of this vehicle and it'll take care of you.
Movement is medicine.
Movement is medicine.
Well said. So if I watched every performance you ever did and I watched every piece of content you ever put out, I knew your whole background story in even greater detail than what you've described today, what is it that there's in your life? What is it that's influencing you in your life that I would have no idea about by what I've seen or know about you? What's the hidden influence in your life?
I don't know if it's just like love, honestly. It's just like a deeper sense of just like wanting to connect with others. Like that's what I do to entertain. That's what I do when I teach. That's what I do when I talk. Like it's just to connect with others so that we can thrive better.
Yeah.
We're all in this together.
Yeah. That's the part about entertainers that I think gets overlooked for, you know, people that are on stage or performing or singing, whatever they're doing. Yes, they have a drive to be seen and they want to make something of themselves. And, you know, even me, like I have narcissistic components in my personality. I want to be podcast. I want to make money off it. I want to be known. Yeah. But then on the other side of that,
the Zach Attack podcast.
Yeah. My baseball nickname from Little League, Zach Attack.
Zach Attack.
But yes, you have that drive to be known and you want to be the center of attention and you want people to see what you're doing. But then on the other side of that, you have that drive to connect with people and reach people with what you're doing. You not only want to, you not only want them to see you, but you want to touch them in some way and kind of inspire them to do whatever it is that they want to do. Not necessarily what you're doing, but
their truth.
Yeah,
it's like whatever you like feel inclined to doing. It's, I mean, not a lot of people are like really intuitive, really in tune with what your urges are, but it's like me being myself and not caring what other people think of me. Like, mm-hmm. not to say that I'm just going to be like, fuck everybody. Like,
yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, I don't care what you think about me, but I love you. Like, yeah. Even if you say, like, your video sucks, user 1735. Like, that's
that
awesome.
That was me. That was me. I made a bot account, user 1735.
Oh, true. That was you, bro. I fucking yeah. knew it was you, bro.
Yeah, that was me. What are you going to do?
But what I'm saying is, I don't mind what you think of me. And that gives you the liberty to not give a fuck what anybody else yeah. thinks of you so that you could yeah. just do you and live yeah. happily and not be like, hey, I need to work because if not, then people won't think I'm worthy of love, which yeah. is that. It's yeah, everybody's
I mean, that's a good point. That something I struggle with is that I don't feel worthy when I'm not producing content or working or doing something. So
preaching
I think a good
choir.
Test of yeah, a good test of how happy you are is if you do nothing for 20 minutes or an hour or a day,
how anxious
are you still happy? Yeah, like do you still feel that need? So that's something I'm definitely working on. I love producing content. I love creating, but then also being okay with who I am when I'm not doing that and seeing my own worth. And there's something else I wanted to say on what you said. You're talking about love and not caring what other people think. So I don't think for me, I don't say I give zero fucks. Like I won't pretend to be one of those guys who just
dude,
can
nobody
not give a shit about
nobody
anything.
Nobody gives zero fucks. Like,
but I think it's about giving the right.
Impossible.
I think it's about giving the right fucks. The people who are close to you, your friends, your family, your girlfriend, to have a small circle of people where you check in and see, okay, if they think I'm doing all right, if they're okay with me, then I'm okay with me. But then beyond that, for people on social media or people that don't know you that well, that's the fucks that I try not to give. And then I try to give the fucks about people who actually know who I am. Like if my mom doesn't like who I am, then I know that I'm doing something wrong. But if someone else, a random user 1735, is like, yo, fuck you, you're a piece of shit, then I'm like, all right, whatever. Like, he doesn't know me, so I don't give a fuck.
I feel you. I definitely feel you on the mom thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, even those people that are really, really close to you, I mean, I love them. I just don't really care. If I mean, like, it's not like I'm gonna, you know, cause any harm to them. That's the thing. It's like, mm-hmm. it's just about the content that you're producing. Like, if it feels genuine to you and you want to try it out and you want to give this, I don't know, the whatever video a chance, like, mm-hmm. just post it. Like, don't be so hard on yourself. Don't think that you have to meet this criteria. I think that's the one thing that I'm struggling with is, listen, like, I love them so much. Like, I really do. But that's not the kind of content, like, they're going to be consuming. That's mm-hmm. not the kind of stuff they're going to watch. But
yeah,
but the thing is, they love me for it too. And that's fine. And I love them back. It's just
yeah.
sometimes we think like, oh, they're really not going to like me. And they're really not. But right now, I just literally just started making content. And that I would think, oh, like, they're going to hate me for this. Like, I don't care. Like, and yeah. I love you.
Yeah.
But I don't care. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think a good point to make too is that when I say checking in with my mom or my parents, I don't mean about the type of content I'm creating. I just mean more the type of person I am. So even if my parents don't like my content, I'm still going to make it. I'm going to make whatever I think is interesting and true and engaging to me. But if my parents have a problem with how I'm living, like the type of person, how I'm treating other people, then I know when I'm going wrong. And I also have a good relationship.
That's because you know they raised you well. That's because you know their values.
Yeah, I'm lucky that I have a good relationship with my parents. For other people, you know, maybe you don't have a great relationship with your parents. Maybe they don't treat you well. So they're in that category of like, I don't give a fuck. Like, I love you, but I don't give a shit what you think because you didn't treat me well. So I'm saying that from the perspective of someone who has a good relationship with their parents, but I know not everyone is lucky enough to have that. So I'm very fortunate.
Yeah. And I'm grateful for it too. That's the kind of relationship I have with my parents as well.
Yeah. So as we wrap up, I have a couple questions for you. One is about fiction. So I don't know what type of fiction you are into, whether it's TV or books or movies, but if you could choose one character to be your mentor and someone that you could actually talk to in real life, that's a fictional character, who would you choose?
Oh my God. What? And he's not real. Like, he never existed, like this person.
Yeah. Like, they're fictional, someone you saw on a show or like a character you read about, someone you admire. If fiction is too specific, then I'll broaden it to just, you can use someone, maybe they're dead, maybe they still exist. So if you don't have someone in mind in fiction, feel free to say someone who.
I mean, honestly, like, well, if it's not fictional, it'd be like Stevie Wonder or something.
Stevie Wonder's a good one.
Oh my God. His dynamic, like, musical ear, like, genius is just out of this world. And then just the way he lives his life is absolutely incredible too. Yeah. Like, what he emanates and like what he gives to others. If it is fictional, oh my God, I couldn't even tell you what is the last. I read a lot of self-help books and a lot of like, I'm very like creative, but like I'm left-brained in the books that I read. So like I'll be reading like The Power of Habit, like 7.
Yeah. And I just got back. I just got into some more fiction books because I was the same way. I was reading a lot of nonfiction. But yeah,
what is your take on that? What is your take on that?
For probably 2 years, I've read almost exclusively nonfiction, and I'll get my fiction through watching or listening to some podcast, maybe. But I just felt like I was missing out on something by not reading fiction, even though I'm learning about a world that doesn't exist. I can still take benefits away from that in terms of creativity and the way that I think about things. The Handmaid's Tale, a book that I'm reading right now, I'm not super far into it, but it's like futuristic, has to deal with women becoming pregnant and basically being used as vessels. And even though it's not a true story, I can still take things away from a fictional work that I can apply creatively to podcasting or writing articles or making TikTok videos, whatever it is. So I'm still going to read a lot of nonfiction, but I'm going to make sure to mix in fiction books every once in a while just to switch it up.
Thanks for that take. I'm going to write that down.
Oh, yeah, dude. Check out The Handmaid's Tale.
Handmaid's Tale. Gotcha.
So the last thing I wanted to ask you is, for the average person that may or may not have, that probably doesn't have a lot of extra time during the day, maybe they have kids and they're going to work and they put their kids to bed, eat, and then by the time they're done, their day's over. So maybe they only have 15, 20 minutes of free time during the day. What's the piece of information that they should take away from this podcast to make better decisions about movement? If they were to take away one thing about movement that would help them do it better with limited time?
What I would say is time cannot be an excuse, especially one, because it's your body. It should be prioritized over other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Two, we can always make more time. There's some time that, you know, really just gets like pushed under the rug. Like, oh, I really need to like watch this like 3-hour Netflix special. Like, no, mm-hmm. you probably don't. You can take, and then that's the third one, 15 minutes, 10 minutes even. If you really like are cutting it down and you really think you don't have time, you could do 10 minutes. I'm telling you, that is more than, it's astronomical, the changes you can make, especially because your brain doesn't actually shut down. So like all of these things that you're all of these things. So like, let's say you do 10 minutes of exercises, like your brain, when you go to sleep, is actually rehearsing all of these exercises. It's like doing it in your head. So the next time that you do it, it's going to be easier, not only physically, but mentally. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to go through the strain of thinking like, oh, I have to do this. Like, you're just going to do it and it's going to take over. And then once that gets through, like, okay, let's add in like 5 more minutes, it's fine. And for those people that think, oh no, that's too little of time, like I'm really not going to make that much progress. Like, it really depends on your goals, like where you want to go versus like where you are right now. But like, I am telling you, 10 to 15 minutes of handstand practice each day has gotten me this far. Like, mm-hmm. it's not, yeah. it hasn't been 3 hours one day and then yeah. I go back to it in 3 weeks. Like, it's every single day, like this little much, like just a little bit better, just a little bit better on the wall, just a little bit better. Handstand, headstand, just a little bit better, just a little bit better, like 10 minutes. And I've gone months without doing it. Years, mm-hmm. like, well, not years, but like 6 months, 7 months without doing a handstand. And then you just go back to it. So it's really all about building that base so that you can have a good base for your life and for your fitness in general. So that when you get to work, you're not like running out of energy. You're not doing all these things. You're not sluggish. You have more energy because of all of this exercise that you're doing, so that life stresses don't get to you. It's more about you're putting the stress onto yourself by doing this exercise, so that when you're at work and Mandy tells you that you didn't do the report right, you could just be like, I mean, I did 20 push-ups. Like, yeah. It's not, obviously it doesn't work like that, but yeah. I did 20 push-ups. Like, I can handle this like stress. It's
yeah.
less stress. I have more energy because yeah. I don't think of those things as stress. Like, I can work up a sweat.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, long-term investments of small chunks of daily time can have a huge
effect. Huge difference.
Well, thank you, Kamal, for hopping on the podcast.
It's been
a blast talking to you. I know a lot of people are going to benefit from this podcast, from meditation, movement, what we talked about with your journey across America and the buildup of your background. I know a lot of people are going to find a lot of value in what you've said and your words today. So thanks again.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, Zach, for having me on.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Augzoro. If you haven't already, please hit us with a 5-star rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. This helps us appear higher in searches, which means more people will find out about Augzoro. Other ways to help get the word out is telling a friend, tagging us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, writing a blog post, or supporting us with a donation on Patreon. We are a completely independent platform, and we're grateful for every listener who supports this podcast. Thanks for coming along for the ride, and I'll see you guys next time.